Disclaimer. The views and opinions you hear expressed by the participants in the show are not the views of AnimeNewsNetwork.com. Enjoy the show! Everybody, welcome to Ancast. I'm Zach Burchy. Justin's here.
Hey, everyone.
It's been a little while.
It has.
How you been?
Buried.
Yeah, a lot of work.
Yeah. I'm actually really grateful to NIS. They gave me a whole bunch of discs to do all at once, and normally they give me 2 a month. This month they gave me 13. In addition to like 5 other clients. So yeah, I'm just I had no time to do anything.
It's a good problem to have until you actually have to do the work.
Right.
Fantastic. Yeah, we just finished Preview Guide, so we came back from Japan, had a couple of days, Preview Guide. So it was a little bit of a whirlwind there, but things have slowed down, and now we can finally start getting some of this other editorial up on the site. Really strongly recommend people check out Mike's interviews with the Space Dandy guys.
Those are fantastic.
Yeah, I'm really, really happy with how those turned out. Mike did a great job, and good news is Mike's doing more of that stuff for us. So
yes.
Look forward to more of it. excited about that content. But other than that, Preview Guide was ridiculous this year.
How many shows did you end up doing?
I think the final total was in like the upper 30s, which... The season itself, if you counted absolutely everything, had like 50 productions in it, like 50 shows. And it's getting to the point now where it no longer makes any sense to have, like, so people may have noticed that, like, the stream hasn't returned, and there's a really good reason for that. I can't find anyone to do it, and that's because no, like, one or not even 2 people should do that. It's anime is a medium, not a genre. It'd be like asking one person to review everything in prime time on the major networks. It doesn't make any sense. And it's not really feasible. And by the time you've consumed that much stuff, of how much value is your writing at that point anyway, right?
Well, it probably made you illiterate.
Yeah, no kidding.
The part of your brain that can form coherent thoughts is just... gone.
Yeah, I mean, the Preview Guide is just one episode, and we cut out stuff like little kids card battling shows, and now the rule is nothing under 5 minutes. So, actually, nothing under 10 minutes. So it's got to be at least half episode length in order for us to review, because there's so many, like, 3-minute, 5-minute shows. It takes you longer to click on and read the review than it does to just watch the damn thing.
Right.
So it's not worth...
And what are you going to say about a 3-minute show?
Thumbs up or thumbs down, that's it.
Can you even form a coherent opinion about something that you saw 3 minutes of?
Not really. I don't think so. I mean, the reviewers have done it, and they've found things to say, but I find it ridiculous. I just find it kind of absurd. It's like, why are we doing this? So I shot it down, and really, with the new format on the Preview Guide, which has slightly more than doubled the traffic on the guide, so it was successful. People really like that new format. I have to make individual show pages and surveys for all of those shows, and I feel stupid doing it for a show that's 3.5 minutes long.
Right.
So fuck it. You know, we don't need to create more work for ourselves unnecessarily. So, but even with that, it was still in the mid to high 30s. So it's like 35, 30 some shows. And that was ridiculous. And there was one day where 12 shows premiered. There was one Saturday where 12 shows premiered on one day, and then 4 more showed up overnight. So in the span of about 36 hours, we had 16 shows to do.
Wow.
It was absolutely insane. But getting back to the stream, there's a reason it hasn't come back yet, and that's because it is not going to come back in in anything that resembles its previous form. What I am likely to wind up doing is hiring a bunch of freelancers to cover a couple of shows each. on a weekly basis. That's likely what is to happen, but I haven't come to the final conclusion on it yet, and it's really hard to find that many writers. So we'll see how it goes. We will be doing more streaming reviews, more, you know, on a weekly basis, not just 1 through 6 or 1 through 12 or whatever, but how and when that comes back, it's still up in the air. It's been one of the most difficult projects I've had to take on, is just to figure out exactly how to do all that stuff. But it's coming. But that's enough about site news. So you've just been working, right?
Yeah. I mean, you have to remember, I'm making discs for like 5 different companies, and I'm also putting stuff on Hulu for 2 different companies.
Right.
So it's just, and everyone is just trying to get everything up. And for some reason, everyone likes to get everything up and ready and out the door right before Anime Expo.
Mm-hmm.
So now it's about 3 months before Anime Expo, so now is when all that stuff's coming due.
Yay.
Yeah. It's just been nonstop. Just, I had no time to do anything else. I've barely been able to sneak in the TV shows I normally watch. That's it.
Wow. Yikes. And you still haven't hired an assistant.
I can't, because all this stuff, this is not going to be the normal amount of work.
Oh, right.
You know,
sitting around for like a month.
Well, yeah, it'll be like all this big rush will be done, and then I'll just be, you know, back to normal. You know, can handle it fine by myself for, you know, for foreseeable future.
Yeah, that's actually kind of why we don't have any additional editorial staff, because most of the time I can handle it just fine. It's just when there's like really big crunches, like all of a sudden there's 50 things to do, then I need an assistant. But most of the time I don't. So it's like, you know, it's a lot of work, but I can handle it, you know? I don't know. It's a tough situation. It'd be nice to have someone, like, sort of on retainer, who's just kind of, like, shows up when you need them, you know?
Sure.
Goes away when they don't, when you don't. So you haven't even had time, really, to watch the TV shows you normally watch.
No, I'm, like, I'm a few episodes. I did get to watch Mad Men, so yay.
Yeah.
I've been keeping up with Community and Parks and Rec, and that's pretty much it. Oh, and Veep. That's it. It's all I can watch. Wow. It's all I can handle.
Yeah. My American TV consumption has dramatically reduced. Like, I don't watch anywhere near as much as I used to.
Well, good, because you were watching
a lot of stuff, yeah.
Piles and piles of stuff.
I don't know about that. I mean, I watched plenty of crap, but I kind of cut most of the crap out. And a lot of stuff ended, so a lot of stuff I was watching went away. And, so just less and less. I don't know. I thought Mad Men was really good, and I'm looking forward to seeing how that concludes. Although I think I kind of know how. There's so many references to fatal alcoholism in that show that I can't imagine it not going that way. But we'll see.
Well, that is how most of them died.
Yeah, this is true. Well, they die in their 60s and 70s as a result of a lifetime of drinking. You know, that's when their livers finally give out.
According to my dad, who was coming up in the world of advertising just as those guys were checking out, they were, you know, late 50s.
Oh, yeah? That's sad. Well, we'll see how it goes. I'm interested to see. I really like the analysis on that show, if you go to the right places, is really good. People catch a lot of little, there's so many like little cultural references and stuff in there that people catch that I don't catch on the first viewing. So it's fun to go back and see the people sort of annotating it. anime, I watched, the Right Stuff release of Space Adventure Cobra, the TV show.
Oh yeah. I've seen those episodes before. I enjoy them.
I only saw a few of them. Should say those DVDs look really good. I watched them on a Blu-ray player on a PS3, and they looked as good as I watched them. Like, well, I don't see how a Blu-ray could look that much better than this for a show like this. It's really cleaned up. The lines are really, really, really clean. I didn't see any artifacting or anything like that. It looked as good as I think that show could look. Obviously, Blu-ray would probably be crisper. You see a lot more of the fine grain, but I think it's as good as you can do for a show like that. It looks really good. But the show itself, I'm a big fan of that movie. Excuse me, the Cobra movie. And I wasn't expecting that level of abstract sort of artistic abstractness. And certainly I didn't get that, but the show really is kind of pulp 60s and 70s science fiction novel covers kind of brought to life.
Yeah, it looks really good for a TV show.
Yeah, for a TV show, yeah. From that era, especially.
Right.
It looks pretty fantastic. I'm not quite taken with the characters. I don't know that I enjoy Cobra for the story so much as I just enjoy the idea behind it and the look of it.
It kind of comes from the same school of, like, male power fantasy as James Bond does.
Yeah, except...
Which is something I've never really related to.
Yeah, I never, you know, girl, car, gadgets, yawn. it's certainly more interesting to look at than James Bond, and that's... So I'll take it over that any day. If you're interested at all in something like that, I would say check that release out. It's a good release of a really visually interesting show that there's certainly nothing wrong with the story. Like it's perfectly fine. That's not why I'm invested in it. It's not why I'm grabbed by it. I'm grabbed by it aesthetically, not necessarily for the story, which normally I would say like, yeah, it looks neat, but who cares? But I like it as a museum piece so much that I'll probably finish the set out.
I need to go back and decide whether or not I like it that much. I'm on the fence.
Enough to like purchase it,
right?
Yeah, I would say it's worth. It's cheap. It's not like they made this like a premium release or anything. I mean, it's you know one Amory case with four discs in it.
Yeah, that's very true. And, you know, that I actually really like that seems to be how the classic old stuff is coming out, because it makes them accessible, because they're already kind of inaccessible.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, before this, even if you wanted fan subs, I don't think it was all that easy to track down.
Yeah, they were around if you know where to get them, but they were, you know, they weren't the best.
Yeah, and this is a remastered release. I don't know if the show's out on Blu-ray in Japan.
I don't think it is.
But, like I said, it's as good as that show is probably ever going to look. So, definitely worth checking out. Not so much for the story, but just for the way it looks. And I think kind of what it represents. It's I would imagine, like, sitting there watching it, I thought, like, man, if I were, like, a science fiction fan in the 80s and I saw this, it would blow my fucking mind.
Oh, absolutely.
Like, if you put yourself in that context, that shit is like, wow. You would have never seen anything like it before. And like, because it really is like the novel covers come to life. It's, you would have never expected to see that like in motion.
Mm-hmm.
Or you know, something that steeped in that particular aesthetic and with all the adult stuff in it that you're looking for, and it's not, you know, for kids or anything. Yeah, I could see that how that would just be totally mind-blowing if you saw it in the 80s. Now it seems kind of like, okay. But yeah, it must have been. Must have been incredible to see that back then. Although, Cobra seems like one of those things that didn't quite make its way over here until, like, maybe the 90s.
Yeah, and by the time it showed up, it was already a little bit of an anachronism.
Yeah, right, exactly. So, I don't know. I mean, I'm sure there were some fans that caught, you know, imported VHS or Laserdiscs or something in the 80s. But if it didn't hit until maybe the 90s, yeah, I could see how it would be sort of a... It wouldn't be as revered as you'd think if it came over earlier.
Sure.
But, yeah, cool release. Definitely worth checking out. Also got the Funimation Blu-ray of the live-action Yamato movie, which I realized I reviewed 4 years ago.
Wow, has it been that long?
Yeah, it came out in 2010. So I guess not quite 4 years because it was like December... It was, like, summer 2010, I think it was out in Japan.
Still.
Yeah, but that took way too fucking long to come out here. Like, way too long. That was ridiculous.
People weren't all that hot on it to begin with.
In Japan, it was a huge success.
Sure. Here, I mean...
I liked it. I gave it a pretty decent score. I went back and looked at my review, and yeah, I liked it plenty. This version, the DVD they put out, the effects... Yeah, they still look pretty TV level, like, not quite sci-fi original movie level, but, like, TV level special effects. And it definitely has Japanese television drama acting.
Right, well, Johnny's.
For sure, yeah, exactly. But it's, you know what, like, if you don't have a lot of experience with the Yamato franchise, and I never saw Star Blazers. It was kind of before my time. By the time I was watching syndicated stuff on TV, we were in the realm of, like, late He-Man, Ninja Turtles kind of stuff. Star Blazers was, like, early
80s. 87-ish, you're talking.
Yeah, 87-ish. But Star Blazers was, like, early 80s.
Really early 80s.
Right. So I never saw it, and it was always a little intimidating seeing those, like, big DVD, those big bricks of, like, unremastered episodes.
I tried to watch some, and actually that was one of the few times that the video quality of a DVD turned me away.
Wow.
Those look bad.
Yeah. And then you find out there's, like, a bunch of Yamato movies, and one of them is, like, the longest animated film ever made. And it all was just kind of intimidating, and it felt like this big, sprawling, kind of slow-moving sci-fi epic that I was just never going to get into. So, really, this movie was kind of my first long-term exposure to the franchise and the story. And I really appreciated it, because it condenses it all down into about 2.5 hours. You get what I feel like is most of the story. And it made me eager to seek out other bits of the Yamato franchise. So, like, now I'm not intimidated by it anymore. I'd be really curious to see, like, you know, if they put out a bunch of episodes of the original version on Blu-ray or something, I would watch that. Or even if someone decided to stream it, I would probably check it out. Just doesn't feel intimidating anymore. Because, you know, those big sci-fi epics, like, you know, Legend of the Galactic Heroes, Yamato, stuff like that, you look at it and you're like, do I really want to invest the time in this?
Right.
You know? But the movie makes it easy. So I would say, you know, worth your time. If you've been curious about it, worth your time. You know, at the very least, you can laugh at the just fucking over-the-top Japanese television acting.
Mm-hmm.
Lots of chest-rending and impassioned speeches. And yeah. What else? Briefly, I'll make this very brief. Just for funsies and to sort of settle an argument, because let me tell you, there is nothing Hope and I like to argue about more than Evangelion.
Shock.
Yeah, shocker. We rewatched the TV ending, and I had an observation about it, because I kind of see something new in that every time I check it out, but it's been a while since I watched it. So I watched the TV ending again, and I realized one thing about it that I never really realized before, and that is the lack of money meant they couldn't show what they wanted to show you, so the show was forced to just get to the fucking point.
Mm-hmm.
And strip away all the science fiction elements and just say, here's what the show is about, these people and their trauma and their feelings. And that's all we can show you. So we just have to get to the point. And I realize I kind of want that to happen again to a show now that is obviously reaching for loftier themes, but they have the budget to gloss it over with all the sci-fi trappings and everything. But to see a show forced to get to the fucking point thematically, emotionally, and all that stuff, and ignore the science fiction trappings, very interesting. And I don't think it's happened since.
Well, there are plenty of shows that run out of time and money at the end, and it just sends them into a death spiral.
Yeah, they just decide not to conclude the story.
Or have a last episode that's just literally marionetted with cells from other episodes.
Yeah, yeah, something like that. But rarely do they make the incredibly bold choice of, let's just strip this down to its emotional core and basically show you a raw wound for 2 episodes at the end, and we'll actually give you a conclusion. We'll actually wrap it up. There will be some self-actualization. We will get to the point. And the end of that show is basically, you know what? Kind of hate myself, but I accept myself for who I am. And it's like, yay. Like, that's a real breakthrough in therapy. It's a positive ending.
Congratulations.
Yeah, yeah. I still really fucking love it. And it was just, I'd never made the observation before, like, oh, the lack of money forced this show to do this. To just get to the point. And the point wasn't the robots and the crazy sex apocalypse stuff. The point was these people and their drama.
Sex apocalypse.
Yeah. Oh, come on. That's
okay, I guess. It's just such the strangest way of putting that.
That's my favorite. That's my favorite way to describe the end of Evangelion. It's sex apocalypse.
All right.
But yeah, interesting. Fun to revisit that. I always see something new every time.
I just put in a massive Right Stuff order because, you know, Discotheque was having a sale, and
oh yeah,
I could probably get some of that, a lot of that stuff for free if I asked Selby, but I just don't care to.
Yeah.
So I snagged Lily Cat, which always kind of a guilty pleasure. It's not a good OAV, but it's kind of has that schlocky late 80s, early 90s OVA kind of weirdness to it.
Yeah.
And then it has that like weird sense of glee that, you know, I guess older kids get from pulling apart action figures.
How do you mean?
Well, it's really gory, but not in an extremely exploitative sort of way. It's just kind of like got a big stupid shit eating grin on its face while it rips off alien hardcore. Mm-hmm. There's a cat that turns into this, you know, weird mecha monster thing.
Okay.
Have you ever seen it?
A long time ago on VHS. Yeah.
It's really dopey. It's super dopey, and it has an old, great old hacky Carl Masek dub.
Right. It's kind of a, those are increasingly the reason to watch something if it has one of those.
Oh yeah, absolutely. that kind of odd sentence cadence and overwritten dialogue, it just, you know, feels like home.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then, let's see, got the disc I made of Unico, the double feature that finally replaced my ratty old VHS rips.
Mm-hmm.
And then got the last two volumes of the Pat Labor TV series on Blu-ray.
Oh, how do those discs look?
They look gorgeous. I'm pretty sure they just ripped straight from the Japanese Blu-rays.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, they look pretty good. I noticed, you know, the last volume came out a couple months ago, and Made in Japan never announced the second OVA series, which leads me to believe that those didn't do well.
Mm, yeah, well, what a shock.
I mean, those can't have been an expensive license, but...
It's possible they sold so little that even the inexpensive license couldn't be justified.
Oh, yeah, I mean, at CPM, back when everything sold, you know, several thousand units, we were lucky to move 2,000 units of each volume.
Yeah.
And, you know, that was a dud for us because we were still, you know, dubbing it from scratch.
Well, Pat Labor is just one of those things where if you're into it, you're into it. And if you're not into it...
You're normal.
Well, I'm trying to find the right words for it. It's like, there are people I know who are big fans of it, and then everybody else. It seems divisive to the point where it's like, either you watched a bunch of it and you've seen the whole thing and you love the hell out of it, or you know of it and they're just not interested. It always seemed like an unexciting show to me.
Well, it is. It's a sitcom.
Right.
It's a sitcom with Mecha and Mamoru Oshii.
Yeah. You didn't check out the live action, did you?
No, I didn't. Oh, it's out?
They streamed the first, the episode 00.
Oh, no, I didn't watch it. I'm terrified for it.
Speaking of Japanese television production value.
Right. Although a couple friends of mine that have been paying attention, they're like, I'm not terrified anymore. It looks like it could be almost acceptable.
I would say almost acceptable about describes it.
Yeah, I'll just stick with what I got. I think we're good.
There's really no reason for that to not be animated.
No. Then I finally got to the theater and saw The Wind Rises.
Yeah, okay. So I want to know what you thought of it.
I loved it. Absolutely loved it. Right up there with Princess Mononoke as my favorite Miyazaki.
Say what?
Right up there with Princess Mononoke as my favorite Miyazaki film.
Okay. I mean, I didn't dislike the film. You know, I'm on record as saying I think it's probably his most important film, the most important film of his career. I mean, I've never seen a filmmaker put a giant fucking period on the end of their filmmaking career like that before. Like, it's a pretty fucking ballsy movie.
Possibly Bergman with Wild Strawberries. That's yeah, about it.
Okay, right, but you gotta go to Bergman.
Just to get too film nerdy here.
Yeah, so what did you like about it so much?
Let's see. Well, A, it was beautiful. B, I saw it dubbed, which was absolutely the right call because that is a really, really good dub. And what I heard of Hideaki Anno trying to voice act, not so great.
Yeah.
It's kind of a perfect meditation on a guy in his life for me. And like I think I would have read it entirely differently had I not known a whole lot and read a whole lot about Miyazaki and what a kvetching, irascible old man he is.
Mm-hmm.
Had I just read it straight on, I think I would have been like, I thought I would have enjoyed it still, but would have gone, this is a little weird. You know, I'm not quite sure what he's saying about both his career and his life and this guy, Jiro. I don't know. Knowing that he is an asshole, knowing that he absolutely hates anime in its current state and thinks of it as, you know, destructive to a whole generation, I actually think of it as kind of a, like, the equivalent of a guy at the end of his life just standing at the edge of a cliff going, all right, this is what I did. You know, I probably fucked a whole generation here, but may God judge me.
Oh, that's an interesting read on it. That's interesting. That's not what I got from it at all. I got from it that our art for art's sake is always justified. And if you are unquestionable artistic or creative genius, it doesn't matter what the public does with your unimaginable work of beauty. You are unimpeachable.
Oh, I didn't get that at all.
I got that completely. Completely, that's what I got from that movie. They whitewash everything about what his fucking plane is used for. Like, the end of the movie is like, well, I guess they never came back. Shrug, let's go have some wine. Like,
I think that very indifference is the most damning thing that he turns on himself. Had it just been that, I might have been able to read that. But the fact that he more or less abandons his wife as she's dying
in the pursuit of his
art, sure.
Yeah,
I don't think he's trying to. There's a big difference between justifying it and like saying this is life as it should be lived, and saying this is what I did. You know, I don't know that I did the right things here, but this is my reasons for doing it, and you know, it's done now.
I'm of two minds on this. I think on the one hand, the stuff with his wife is clearly Miyazaki expressing his regret for not being with his family for his entire life. Like, that guy's got so much public regret about his son and his relationship with him and all of that stuff. I mean, that's public. Like,
the tone is the same with that and his work, though.
I don't agree with.
We're talking about a guy that has been horribly appalled by women coming up to him and going, oh, my son has watched your movie 100 times.
Right.
This is a guy who, you know, has been held up as, you know, the champion of anime, and looks back and sees a minefield of moe and otaku pandering and a country full of hikikomori.
See, I saw it as a lot more insular than that. I thought it was just about him as a man and as an artist. I didn't necessarily look at it through the lens of anime. I looked at it through the lens of, here is an artist examining his life and what he created, and the ultimate statement to me was, if you are a genius creating masterpieces, first of all, what the public does with them after they're out of your hands is not your responsibility. And art for art's sake is ultimately a life well lived.
I don't think it was even making an argument that life was well lived.
I thought it kind of was. The end stuff with the Italian spirit guide, spirit animal guy, to me was that the period on the end of that statement was, well, you make planes, they don't come back. That's what planes do. Let's go. It's like, what?
I just thought that as him being like the Pied Piper that he follows.
Yeah, sure, but.
He had to have a reason for doing what he did.
To me, the
justified
film,
or not,
sure. But to me, the film and they constantly reiterate this. Well, we're not warmongers. We're not war profiteers. We're just making planes. We're just making airplanes here. That's it. We're just making planes. The movie has to justify that and pat itself on the back for it over and over and over again. It's driven into that film that they were not doing anything wrong by designing those planes.
That struck me entirely not as a pat on the back, and frankly, a pat on the back is the last thing I would ever expect from any Miyazaki reflection ever.
I guess. I don't know.
That came to me as defensiveness within the context of the story. It's like they could mentally divorce themselves from that while they were doing it.
Yeah, I would have been.
And then at the end, all of the work they put in for it came to nothing. None of those planes came back. Everyone in them dead.
But he was very proud of the work he did. You still made this beautiful thing.
Miyazaki is proud of his movies.
I still want to live in a world where there's pyramids. Like, that whole, the Italian spirit guide guy, to me, is like the soul of that movie. Like, he is expressing the optimist, the positive side of it, which is, well, we make these great, amazing things, and we're brilliant people, and the world just, what the world does with them, there's nothing we can do about it, but we're geniuses, so we have to create.
And this is what I love about the movie. It's this very argument here is like, is that his spirit animal, or is that literally the devil on his shoulder?
Maybe that's a good point. I think you're absolutely right in that it's great that the film generates that kind of discussion. I think it is so much more interesting than the World War II stuff. Because, and like I said, I think, like, I was talking to, we just had Brian Rue on, and we were talking about this movie a little bit. And I said, like, well, I'm sick of Miyazaki scholarship. Like, I'm tired of anime academics just focusing on him so much. But with this film, now I want to see them have to completely recontextualize his entire career, because that's what that film demands.
Yeah, absolutely.
You have to recontextualize everything he's ever made and his entire life as an artist with that movie. He forces you to do it.
You know, actually, I'm glad you brought up Brian Rue, because obviously Brian Rue, Mamoroshi. I kind of compare this film a lot to a much, much more accessible, easily digestible, perhaps in a Trojan horse version of Skycrawlers.
Yeah.
Maybe Miyazaki's answer to Skycrawlers.
Yeah, I doubt that, but I think you're right to an extent. To me, I am still flabbergasted at the fact that he chose to basically represent himself, because let's not kid ourselves, like, this movie is about him as an artist.
Right. Absolutely.
And the person that he chose to represent himself created a killing machine.
Yep.
Japan's most infamous killing machine.
I think just that sentence is, with the monumentally dire worldview of Miyazaki as we know it, I think that sums up the movie in one package.
That's a really interesting read on it. I've actually, we've talked about this movie like four times on this podcast. You've never been around for it, but that's the first time I've heard that argument. I think it's a really strong one. And now it makes me want to see it again.
Yay.
And take a look at it with that in mind. I didn't get that from it. I got a lot of ego from it. I got a lot of, hey, look, the stuff that I made it. It was perfect. I made it to the best of my ability. I thought I was creating something, a work of art, and I put it out there into the world. And what the world did with it, well, that's on them. You know, it's not on me. No blood on my hands.
Everything I've seen of Miyazaki, I can never imagine him making a statement like that. I can never imagine, him not blaming himself for things that he has wrought by accident, while at the same time being kind of proud of the achievements in their own right.
I got a lot of pride. I think there was a lot of pride in that movie.
Absolutely. I mean, he is the only anime dude to have won an Oscar, period.
Yeah.
I mean, absolutely. Swell with pride at that. That's one hell of an accomplishment.
Right.
But, at the same time, this is a movie about the choices that he made and the things he gave up. And, all for being the king of a domain that is now, equated with cheap pandering otaku content serving a largely unemployed audience.
That is bleak. I'm going to have to rewatch the
film.
That's
why I love this movie.
Yeah, I'm going to have to rewatch the film with that reading. I don't think that my interpretation is necessarily invalid in the face of that.
No, of course not. I mean, they're interpretations.
No, I'm just saying. It's an interesting interpretation. I think it's totally valid. I really do need to see it again.
I do too. It's still in theaters, so.
Yeah, I don't think it's out. There's no scheduled release, but I would imagine like late summer or something like that. It'll be out.
Little Bird told me we got a long wait.
Yeah, ways to go. It's not out on Blu-ray in Japan yet, so.
No. I think we have at least 7 or 8 months.
Yeah, it was interesting seeing that movie and then visiting the Ghibli Museum. which is
all like marketing friendly. This is how the master creates his work.
It's a monument to the marketing prowess of Studio Ghibli.
I think that museum has made like a nice little cocoon for old Miyazaki to just kind of make his toys until his years wane on him.
Yeah, I guess. I don't know. I mean, the fact that there's a whimsical fantasy land version of the Ghibli Studios in there, it's like here's what Studio Ghibli would look like if it were in a fantasy movie, like really fucking weird, like it's like the you go into like the Disneyland story at Disneyland and there's like a recreation of Walt's office with his drawing table on it. It's like this doesn't seem accurate. Where's the giant ashtray?
Right.
It's a very super marketing friendly kind of a thing. It's that cutesy Ghibli that you find in Japan at least in every department store has like that Ghibli section where you buy all your Totoros and your Gigi's and quaint crockery with hints of Ghibli characters on them and stuff like that.
Right.
It's a totally different side of Ghibli. And I'd be curious to know how much of all that marketing shit and all that merchandise Miyazaki even had anything to do with.
I'm sure he approves the toys, but it's hard to say. I mean, that thing is such a marketing machine.
Yeah. Indeed. All right, so we got a bunch of Twitter questions. Gavmatic asks, how important do you think anime is in the overall history of animation? Really important? But if you're doing like a global history of animation, first of all, Jesus. Second of all, of course it's important.
I mean, it's a huge, huge, huge chunk of the overall number of pieces of animation made in the world, in world history.
Yeah, name another country that produces 50 animated shows a season.
Holy shit, that's a lot of shows. You know, we're talking at this point, with the sheer amount of animation produced, it may well be a third of all animation produced in the world ever.
Yeah.
It kind of came from Japan, or more. So, you know, that's a lot of shit.
Yeah, very important. I think if you were to look at it, if somebody was, like, presenting their history of animation and it was just, like, France and America, that would be some bullshit. That would be some serious bullshit. Very important. Also from Gavmatic, do films like End of Evangelion or the works of Satoshi Kon deserve to be held alongside, say, Disney? Depends on the Disney movie. If you're talking about, like, Disney stuff from, like, the Golden Age, I don't know. You're talking about, you know, films made for completely different audiences, completely different reasons. That's like saying, do the films of Lars von Trier deserve to be held up alongside the films of Pixar? or any other acclaimed family filmmaker?
Yeah, I mean, anime in general is kind of low-budget filmmaking. And I don't think it's fair to compare it against I don't think it's ever fair to compare a film visually that was $20,000 or, you know, even $2 million with a film that cost $150 million.
Yeah.
That's just inherently not fair. In terms of storytelling, you know, different audiences, different goals. I mean, they deserve to both be appreciated, and they deserve to both be held up as examples of, at different ends of a spectrum, what animation is capable of at its highest end artistically. Mm-hmm. But you know, at a certain point, you don't gain anything by comparing artwork.
Yeah, you can have you can have favorite artists, and you can be a hobbyist when it comes to art. But if you walk in and say, like, hey, does this Jackson Pollock deserve to be held up against, you know, the works of Renoir? It's like, these two belong in their own categorizations and classifications and for a reason. Like, there's a reason that you do eventually compartmentalize, because there's kind of not a point in comparing a Jackson Pollock to a Renoir unless you are taking an art history class and need to just identify movements, you know?
Right.
I think the real question is this stuff legitimate, like Disney? Like, does it deserve to be held in the same critical eye? Deserves to be held in the same esteem? And I think, of course, it does.
Yeah, I mean, any good piece of filmmaking does, yeah. Animated or otherwise.
Right. You know, that gets into territory where you're treating anime like, or animation like a genre and not a medium. And you shouldn't do that. Okay. Braggus JS asks, what really determines an anime to be a crossover hit? The last one to do so was Fullmetal Alchemist almost 10 years ago.
No, the last one to do so was Attack on Titan a year ago.
Yeah, which was the first one since Fullmetal Alchemist, so I get his
point. Arguably Space Dandy 2 months ago.
Yeah, arguably, yeah.
I'm not sure that one got into the zeitgeist much, but, you know.
Lots of people watched it.
Yep.
Enough people watched it to give it more episodes, so.
Yep.
Which I'm very happy about. I think more and more, what I have noticed, anime becomes a hit, like a real honest-to-God hit, like merchandise in American stores. It's on Adult Swim, the DVDs sell really well, it streams great on Netflix, whatever. Which Attack on Titan is the first show to do in quite a while. To me, it seems like it's determined by whether or not people are still talking about it after it's over. And Attack on Titan definitely did that.
Mm-hmm.
People were still talking about that 6 months after it ended.
I'm still hearing conversation from people who are not anime fans about it.
Yeah, who have just figured out what it is and are watching it on Netflix. And once it hits on Adult Swim, it's going to be even bigger. Most anime is super disposable. And that's not a slam on anime. That's what most television is, just super disposable. I would argue that Attack on Titan is doing something similar to something like Game of Thrones, where, based on, you know, series of books that were bestsellers, but largely considered sort of this giant inaccessible thing, and then the TV show turned it into this pop culture phenomenon, because it made it more accessible. And people didn't stop talking about Game of Thrones after the first season ended. People went on and on and on about it and turned it into this big thing, like Attack on Titan. So it's whether or not it stays in the cultural zeitgeist, and if it can stay there, and for whatever reason it seems really hard for an anime to get in there and stay there, that seems to be what determines it. Mm-hmm. And you won't know that until it happens, and you can't predict it. You know, you can try, you can sit back and say, like, well, that show's going to be a big hit. But is it? Is it really going to be a hit? Like, people will probably watch it and buy it, but it won't become this big pop culture thing that everyone's still talking about months after the fact. Like, that's on another level.
Right.
So, yeah. I don't think there's one determining factor. Good writing helps. Exciting story, cool premise, good characters, things people want to talk about. All that stuff helps. Okay. EA Phone Home asks, with Gundam Unicorn ending next month and big success in Japan, but unknown sales in the U.S., is a simul dub for Gundam possible in the future? I don't see it happening again anytime soon.
No. Well, not unless Sunrise produces it themselves like they did for Unicorn.
Right. Yeah, I don't... I mean, Unicorn did well for them in Japan. It did pretty okay for them here, to my knowledge. At least it did for a while. I don't know if it's selling anymore, but... had to take forever to come out, so.
Right.
It seemed like there was one volume a year or something like that.
It's a high. It's an OVA that every episode is made like a movie, so, yep.
Yeah. It seemed to lose a lot of steam. People were talking about it at first, and people were talking about it because it was labeled a success, but then they kind of stopped talking about it. And I haven't really even heard Gundam fans talking about it too much.
It comes out so slow.
Yeah. Poor Mike.
don't cry for him. He's getting hired.
Yeah, that's true. But the schedule they've got him on. all right. Anything plus more asks opinions on the new Berserk films and the franchise as a whole. Boy, I really found those Berserk films to be disappointing.
I got to recuse myself because I worked on them.
Yeah. I found them to be... God, the CG was just... It's distractingly bad, you know, cut rate CG combined with, you know, I thought Studio 4C actually did a really nice job on the 2D animation. Like, the traditional stuff looked really nice for the most part. It captured, I think, the look of Mirror's art as well as animation like that can. Mirror's art is, like, impossible to replicate in movement, I think. I don't think you could do it. Or it would be fantastically expensive and take forever. But the CG was bad, and the CG was so bad in the third movie that it ruined the emotional impact of the Eclipse stuff, I thought. I thought the Eclipse looked goofy and cheap and, frankly, crappy. So it didn't work. And the story of the films is all really truncated, and that's fine. But, I thought they were just a big letdown. They didn't capture me emotionally at all. And frankly, like, if you're going to animate Berserk, do something other than the Golden Age arc. Like, it's been done. That TV show was pretty good. You don't need to do that stuff again. So, if they're going to make more Berserk, please move past that. I don't need to see that reanimated again. Franchise as a whole, I stopped caring about Berserk a long time ago. So maybe I don't care. I don't know.
Yeah.
Too much monster rape. All right, Groovin asks, what are your opinions of 2014 spring season shows, likes and dislikes? Any you plan to follow?
I haven't watched any of them, but I have my eye on a few.
What are you thinking about?
That volleyball anime, what's it called?
Haikyuu or Haikyuu or something like that?
Yeah, that looks like it has potential, and a lot of people on my Twitter are getting very excited about it.
Mm. Nice animation on that.
They said it was pretty nice.
Yeah.
It was like, of the sports shows this season, it's the nicest looking one.
Definitely, yeah. That baby steps tennis thing looks pretty butt.
Yeah. I thought it might be okay, but no.
Yeah.
Let's see, is there anything else I'm really... Ping Pong. I'm looking forward to really watching Ping Pong. I will marathon the shit out of that.
Mm-hmm.
Other than that, I just know there's, like, I only thing that really caught my eye outside of the normal sports stuff was really, was there anything?
Yeah, honestly, not really. It was kind of a weak season. I didn't find too much that really lit my world on fire. I thought that The World Is Still Beautiful has some potential. First episode was nice. I will probably watch. I'll probably wait to see opinions on that when it ends, and then decide whether or not I want to go back and watch it. I've started watching JoJo's Bizarre Adventure, but I started from the beginning.
So, that's probably right.
Yeah. Well, no, everyone says skip the first two seasons and just go straight to what's airing now.
Really?
Yeah, because they're standalone for the most part. No pun intended.
Ayo.
Yeah.
One Week Friends looks like it could be cute.
Oh, yeah, the art style on that one, I was kind of like, eh.
That doesn't bother me that much.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm pretty I'm tough to please. What can I say?
I just like seeing Bernherder in the darkness.
Mm, yeah.
The show looks like Bite, but...
Yeah, which that show is Elfin Lied 2, apparently, like, basically. Yeah, gross. Yeah, I don't know. I thought it was kind of a weak season. Nothing really stuck out. But we've been kind of spoiled. Like, last year was a pretty good year for stuff.
Right. And summer season is going to be insane.
Is it?
Oh, God. Well, we have the Sailor Moon reboot.
Oh, yeah.
We have a second season of Space Dandy.
Yeah.
Let's see, we don't care about this, but we have Sword Art Online 2.
Oh, God. Yeah, you're right, it is going to be.
We have Free Season 2.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so, and we have a new Black Butler.
Okay.
I don't care about that. They're recutting and re-airing Psycho Pass to lead up to a second season of that.
Why? Okay.
I don't know. They're doing it. I don't know. There's a couple shows that that look really possibly really good. So I don't know. Ogoro Miyazaki's TV show comes out. Sanzoku no Musume Ronja.
Most of that stuff sounds exciting.
Yeah.
I thought you meant insane and like, there's 60 shows this time. It's like, no!
Oh, there probably will be. We just don't know what they are yet.
Yeah, right. But most of that sounds good. Like, I'm excited for... super excited for Space Dandy. Like, they can't put merchandise for that shit out fast enough. That's what I really want action figures for Space Dandy.
Oh, shit. And Shinichiro Watanabe Yoko Kano's new show is coming out. Zankoku no Terror, Zankyo no Terror, sorry, which is literally two school kids do 9/11.
Great. Well, I'm sure it'll be interesting.
It's Watanabe, I'm not worried.
Yeah. Well, that's cool. Yeah, no, I mean, that all of that sounds more exciting than what we got in the spring. Nothing much in the spring really grabbed me. Everybody's excited about Mushishi, but I never watched Mushishi. I saw like a few episodes of it and said, it's okay.
Geez, there's a new Tatsuo Sato show also. This is going to be one hell of a summer.
Yeah. And it starts while we're at Anime Expo, fuckers. God, I hate it when that happens.
It happens every year. Every year.
All right. It doesn't happen every year. Sometimes it happens. I'm fine if it starts the day I get back from AX.
Oh, okay.
It irritates me when it starts the day I leave for AX. okay, because we're at AX for like 4 days, 5 days, something like that.
Yep.
all right, Mouse1497 asks, do you think the argument that Madoka Magica is a fairly sexist show has any basis or merit?
How is it sexist?
I haven't heard that argument, but I'm going to go with no.
There are almost no male characters at all.
Yeah, but that doesn't stop people from analyzing everything through the ridiculous gender standards, like the Tumblr standards for gender representation, and declaring everything to be lacking. I don't know what their argument is, and to be perfectly fair, all kidding aside, I don't want to dismiss that argument without having heard it. I don't know what that argument is, so I'll go look at it. I'm sure it's easy to find.
can I just say something here?
Yeah.
Not to diminish the potentially valid arguments of something being offensive or not, or being not sensitive to the needs of others or not, but people care way too much. They care way too much. People are so obsessed with being victimized by media at this point that it's too much.
I agree with you.
It's one thing to want certain things out of the pop culture that we have. It's another thing to cry foul at everything that comes out because past a certain point, you're just being annoying.
Yeah.
Even if you're making sense.
I do not disagree with that. There is a level of willful... I've seen this stuff get to the point where there's a level of willfully ignoring context just in order to maintain outrage.
Hashtag cancel Colbert.
That just drives me nuts. If you are ignoring context so you can be mad, you're being a disingenuous asshole. Like, I can't believe it gets so crazy sometimes. Everything is ableist or sexist or racist or whatever, and the problem that you run into is that things that do legitimately deserve to be called out for that stuff now it's harder to take any of it seriously because that culture has decided that everything is on trial all the time.
It's totally Boy Who Cried Wolf at this point. They're not picking their battles.
And you know what pisses me off? Is that this is the kind of cartoon liberalism. Like, and I am a proud, like, outspoken, liberal, progressive guy. And these people have turned my causes and the causes that I believed in and the values that I believed in into a fucking cartoon. A conservative cartoon of what progressivism is supposed to be about. Like, this is the kind of liberalism that you see parodied in, like, conservative political cartoons. I used to think, like, oh, that's just a boogeyman. That's just conservatives just think liberals are like that. And then I see this stuff, and I'm like, you're playing right into it. You're playing right into it. You make us all look like jackasses with this stuff.
Yep.
It makes me throw my hands up, and it's like, wait a minute, is this going to... I hope it doesn't make me stop caring about things like that, because I do, deeply, but they make it so hard now.
It, I mean, that's the problem. I mean, everyone wants to be a victim is the problem, because it dissuades people from having to take control on their own. Years ago, I was asked to speak at this... is called East Coast Asian American Student Union, ICASU. Mm-hmm. And now these are kids. It was at Penn State in, I think, somewhere in Pennsylvania. I forget where exactly. Took a train there. This is when I was working at, you know, Imagination TV. And so I get there, and all of these students are like the most coddled but directionless kids on the planet. I talked to a handful of them, and to a fault, they're enjoying college life, but they don't really know why they're in the major they're in. They're basically studying it because their mom told them to. Mm-hmm. And they have no real drive or anything, but they really want to be angry about something. There were literally panels called How to Hold a Sit-In Protest. And there were literally, and I can't even make this shit up, there were still t-shirts that said, you know, remember Victor Wong, who was literally the last Asian American to be killed in a hate crime in 1980. My parents were invited to his wedding. Now, look, hate crimes are a real thing. They happen all the time. If the last example you can point to is it happened 30 some years ago, you might not have a point.
Yeah, you may. Your outrage might be slightly misplaced.
And so my panel, which was more of a roundtable, which was, you know, how to, you know, get past, you know, stereotypes of Asians in the media. I'm like, do you have any idea how few Asians there are in the media? There are a handful here and there, but not enough that are really, you know, telling our stories to actually make an impact. There are lots of Asian. And then when, you know, their stuff comes out, Asian Americans don't support them. And so, you know, what is the answer here? You have to come up with your own stories. You have to, you know, share and be a part of a media discussion here. It's not enough to just stand on the sidelines and kvetch. Mm. You have to, you know, be an active part of an ecosystem if you're going to contribute things in the direction you want them to be in.
Right. And how was that received?
Okay.
Yeah. Oh, all right. I guess we'll do that.
Let's go downstairs and watch the, you know, 30th all-Asian a cappella group. Justin stands in a dark corner and finds some rope and a ladder.
Yeah. Well, that's how we feel about that. String of Sonata asks, your opinions on Madoka Magica Rebellion and the fan controversy. Did you ever get around to watching that?
Nope. It's not out on video yet, is it?
I thought it came out. I thought I saw people talking about getting their DVDs. I don't
know. Can you tell how much I care?
Yeah. Yeah.
That TV show had a perfect ending for me, and from the sounds of it, there is not really a good reason to mess with that perfect.
Nope.
So I'm just... Maybe I'll set this one out entirely.
I didn't mind the film, but it is... that franchise needed it. Like, we need a third arm or... second head or something. It, totally unnecessary and superfluous. Didn't need to exist, except, boy, they wanted to make some money, and they did. So, good for them. I don't think it's a way... If you're a fan of the show, I think, even just out of curiosity, it's totally worth your time to check it out. You might not like what they did with it. I think they betrayed one of the characters pretty badly in the writing. they basically... You know, wrote themselves into a corner, had to figure out a way to write themselves out of it, and so they figured out a way to do that, and whether or not you like the way they came up with, well, that's up to you. Worth seeing, though, I think, if you're a fan of the show. Don't bother if you haven't seen the show. Oh my gosh. It'll make no sense at all. Also from Miles 1497, what recent shows do you reckon will be regarded as classic in the future? Well, I think Madoka, for sure. Probably Attack on Titan, although the show's strengths are just the mangas for the most part.
I think that's the 2010s version of Berserk.
You think so?
Yeah, I do. I think a lot of people really love it now, and it'll be remembered, you know, fondly by the people that are watching now, but I don't think people will be watching it in 10 years.
I think once it gets on Adult Swim and it's dubbed, and by the time this goes up, maybe by the time this goes up, or maybe a little after, we'll have a review of the first 5 episodes dubbed. Funimation sent a screener on that one. I think once it shows up dubbed on Adult Swim, it'll have a much longer life. And I think it'll probably be like one of those shows that people who are getting into anime now will remember very, very strongly later. So new or more recent anime fans, it'll probably be a touchstone for them, I think. So probably you still hear. I would imagine you will still hear about it in 10 years, in the same breath as you would hear about shows people remember, shows that got them into anime, that kind of thing.
Right.
Maybe not like a classic. I don't think those come along very often. Okay. Same guy asks, "What are your opinions on Gunslinger Girl, the original series?"
I was very meh on it.
I didn't watch the whole thing. I think I saw about half of it.
Yeah, same here.
And I kind of lost interest.
None of those Girls with Guns shows from that era. Who was that director that did all of those? That was crap. I'm blanking on his name.
I can't remember.
It was this one director that did a whole mess of them, and they all kind of bled into each other and felt very samey to me.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, I know that show. Gunslinger Girl in particular, like, is very appreciated and has had a very passionate and vocal fan base. Now it just has people who remember it very fondly and will say, like, oh, that show was really fantastic.
My mistake, it wasn't that guy at all anyway.
Oh, all right then.
Delete everything I said.
So, I mean, I don't know. I doubt I'll ever revisit it. It's an old Digipaint show, so it's going to kind of look like shit on... I know there's Blu-rays of it, but I'm sure it looks bad.
It's not that old. I think it might hold up okay.
It's like 2004, isn't it?
Yeah, but it's, did they do an upscale of that? I think they did an upscale.
Probably. I don't know. All I know is, like, I gave up on it halfway through due to lack of interest. I have enough stuff to watch where I probably wouldn't revisit it, but I know people really like it, and, like, everything I've heard about it, people say, like, this is really good. I know people don't like the sequel as much, but they really like that first season, so... I don't know. That's my opinion. I understand people really like that show. All right.
Got a lot of angst.
Yeah. Yes. Russell Latchaw asks, what movies have you guys enjoyed this year, and what are you looking forward to?
I haven't watched anything.
Really?
Just Wind Rises, that's it.
I missed a bunch of stuff while we were in Japan, but I came back, and the first thing I saw was Noah.
I gotta get out and see that.
And I loved that. I thought that was just fantastic. I was gripped from start to finish. It is a great movie. I kind of had a feeling like that was going to be a really good movie, and it totally was. Strongly recommend it to anybody, religious or not. It is not Bible movie for Christians, so put that out of your head. it's just a really, really, really well-done, thoughtful... version of a story that everybody knows, but it's a weird, violent, kind of gruesome, but totally fascinating and really ancient feeling version of that story. Morally and ethically very complicated, gives you a lot to think about, very thought-provoking. Really, really, really cool special effects, done in sort of a quasi-stop-motion style, so it just feels old, doesn't feel like a, you know, like a big, stupid blockbuster CG eye-fuck thing. Yeah, great movie. Like, I really liked it. I really want to see it again, actually. But other than that, I'm behind. I haven't seen Grand Budapest Hotel even yet, so...
Yeah, I almost went to go see that last weekend, and I just wasn't feeling
it. Instead, you collapsed.
Yeah, instead I collapsed and curled in the fetal position.
Yeah, I think I'll probably see that this weekend. I can't muster up the ability to care about Captain America, but I will probably watch it at some point. But in terms of stuff I'm looking forward to, summer's coming, and it's just a big fuck mess of sequels. And sequels. Nothing comes to mind immediately that I'm, like, really looking forward to. It's just that time of year where the movies are kind of like, yeah, I guess I'll watch that.
Oh, I take that back. I did see an indie movie off Netflix starring Jonathan Groff called COG.
Okay.
Which is actually adapted from a David Sedaris book.
Oh, okay.
It was okay. The thing is, like, Jonathan Groff is a really good everyman, or every kid in this case, because he's playing, like, a 19-year-old. But, I don't know, that when David Sedaris stuff is all about the narration and, like, kind of his snide, weird musings and observations, and without that, there's not a whole lot left.
Oh, there's no narration in the film?
No.
Why would you make a book based on a David Sedaris movie that had no David Sedaris book that had no narration?
They tried.
That's weird.
Yeah.
Doesn't sound like it would work at all.
It doesn't.
Okay. We're heading into sequel season, so...
Well, you know, up until now has been the dead period anyway, so it's not like we can really be expected to have, like, rushed out and seen a whole bunch of stuff by now.
Yeah, that's true. Pixar was supposed to have an original IP movie out this year, but then some behind-the-scenes fuckery happened, and they pushed it until, like, next Christmas. I don't know what's going on over there, but they gotta get their shit together.
Is it the one I think it is?
It's a dinosaur thing.
Okay, no, there's something else coming, though.
Yeah, they've got a few original IP things, like, in the hopper. And I'm looking forward to that stuff because I'm really tired of their mediocre sequels.
They're also doing Dawn of the Dead.
What?
That's what I heard.
Oh, I think I heard that too, but, like, in passing.
I think they're actually doing it.
I don't know. All I know is I was watching the special features on the Monsters University Blu-ray just to take a look at them, and everybody on that Pixar campus looked like the most drained, like, soul-weary, just fucking done person, like, in the history of being done. And normally those special features are all bright, happy smiles. Everybody's so fucking happy to be working here. But this was just like this... Everybody looked like somebody had just been hitting him with a hammer for a month.
It's just... From what I've heard, it's pretty... A pretty rotten place to work. And the one person I know that actually came from Pixar that I've worked with since is a huge fucking train wreck of a human being. So...
Yeah, well, maybe it's not the magical fun factory they want you to think it is.
All I know is that if I had good ideas and I worked for Pixar, I would be, like, holding on to them.
Yeah, right.
Because I don't want them to, you know, print it out on their 3D printer and then use it as an instrument to beat me.
Yikes. I don't know what happened. Maybe there was a brain drain over there, but their golden days are long over.
Sad.
Yeah. All right. We'll wrap up here pretty quick. Land of Obscusion asks, do you think originality is overvalued? Is different and potentially failing inherently better than already done but well executed? I think you got to take it on a case-by-case basis, but executed well is generally the most important thing.
You have to bring something new to the table. Something. Otherwise, you are completely redundant and you're just kind of filling a need rather than saying anything.
Yeah, I would...
It doesn't have to be the whole grand swath of things, but at least a new approach. Something.
Well, I think that's included in the executed well. Like, if you're doing a really old idea, but you execute it really well, included in that is usually, like, something fresh. Like, I think that's sort of a requirement. Like, if you're telling me a story I've heard 50 times, and you do it in a really exciting and new way that I haven't seen before, that's executed really well. So these things kind of go hand in hand.
What about an anime with a magical academy and this dude who's surrounded by a lot of girls and some of them have big boobs and he falls into them when he trips?
Yeah, that's a great idea. I bet you could get that made.
Sadly, yes. I better write into Answer Man and ask where to send my idea.
Also, an addendum, he says, also, would you hate something that delivers on everything except visuals? No.
There are lots of shows with shit visuals that I love because that's a great story.
Yeah.
Actually, I think the worst offender was, do you remember Kazeno Yojimbo?
Oh, man, yes.
That, I really loved the story, but that was so poor visually that even I had trouble with it, but I still ended up liking it in the end.
Frankly, there's a lot of anime that... where the story and the character, you're drawn into the story and the characters, and that's the draw. The artistic value of it is questionable at best.
That's true.
That's a lot of stuff, because it's produced for so little money. So, you know, these are no-budget shows. So, you know, at least plenty of them are. anyway, XB Saint asks, as media mix, transmedia and anime helped fuel, you can't criticize with anime without reading anything, you can't criticize this anime without reading everything thinking. So we're running into this commonly in the preview guide, where something based on a light novel comes out and the first episode sucks, and the critics say this sucks, and then the forums fill up with people saying, well, you haven't read the light novel, so you're not qualified to talk about this show. I think the light novel stuff and the like manga scanlation guys who pile into the forums who tell us that we're wrong and your previews are garbage because you don't know everything about this already and you didn't read the scanlations or the fan-translated light novels, that's the last bastion. That's kind of the last place that the super elitist fans have to go to be superior about something. It's not that I don't think there's value in knowing about that stuff ahead of time, but if you're just a TV critic, you're there to criticize or you're there to critique the show. That's it. Just the show. It's not your job to have read every fucking scrap of everything related to the story. It is your job to assess the TV show that you are watching. If the TV show does a poor job of pulling you in, doesn't set up its characters or its world very well, and it's just this big, clumsy, badly written exposition dump, then it has failed as an adaptation, which is designed, generally, the point of an adaptation is to bring new people in and help them understand the story, tell the story coherently, in a new medium, which would be television, which is different from a book. So telling somebody that their opinion is invalid because they haven't read these fan-translated light novels is fucking bullshit. It has nothing to do with their job. And it's the last sort of, like, here's how I can be exclusionary and elitist and pretend that my opinion is the only valid one because I read this book. That, to me, that's what that is. It used to be, I've seen the fan subs, and you're only watching the dub version, so you don't know. And that makes my opinion more superior to yours. And then before that, it was... people have been doing this in fandom for forever. Figuring out ways to be elitist about it. And this light novel stuff is just the latest version of that. That's where I come down on that. A couple of questions about asking whether or not we've seen that CG Captain Harlock movie. I have not.
I haven't either. I saw the trailer, but nothing beyond that.
Yeah, I know it came out on Blu-ray. I know a bunch of people who got the Blu-ray. From what I understand, there's a lot of like, oh, that was pretty good. You know, the high-voiced kind of. In a few months, they're going to be like, yeah, that wasn't that great.
Right.
So I'm cautiously looking forward to seeing it. I'm curious about it. I just haven't seen it yet. So I think that about does it. We got some other questions, but we're running short on time here. So we're going to go ahead and wrap up here. Thanks to everybody who sent in their questions. And Justin, I hope your workload lightens up.
Thank you. Seeing the light at the end of the tunnel. That might just be death.
And I hope not. Okay, that's our show. The theme song is Bucharest. It's by the band The New Division. You can check them out at newdivisionmusic.com. Don't forget to subscribe to us on iTunes. Leave us a rating or review. We really appreciate it. And we'll see you all next week.